You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for January 8th, 2016. Welcome back and Happy New Year. This week, I'm going to talk about risk-based blood pressure treatment, the limits of genotype testing, coronary artery calcium and atrial fibrillation, heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and the things that influence doctors' decisions. So first up is let's talk about blood pressure treatment. A massive meta-analysis, which included 123 studies and over 600,000 subjects and was published in The Lancet over the holidays, showed that blood pressure lowering reduces vascular risk across all different various blood pressure levels and comorbidities. The benefit was proportional to the magnitude of the blood pressure lowering, and the baseline blood pressure did not affect the relative risk reduction, and neither did the baseline cardiovascular disease. Specific drugs had specific effects, namely, calcium entry blockers were better at preventing stroke, and diuretics were better at preventing heart failure. The most important take-home from this study, the reason why it's the lead study of this podcast, is that it supports the notion of treating blood pressure to the level of risk rather than a certain number. Now, this concept is similar to the statin drugs. There's a relative risk reduction that is consistent. So the higher the absolute level of risk, the greater will be the absolute risk reduction in blood pressure treatment. Next is a study on the limits of using gene variants as biomarkers. So the prevalence of gene variants associated with long QT syndrome and Brugada did not correlate with pathologic arrhythmia. These were the findings of a large cohort study for more than 2,000 patients, and it was published this week in JAMA. This is, a very important study because, as Dr. Dan Roden, from Vanderbilt, who was quoted in a study but not part of the study, said, it dispels the notion that we can use poorly understood gene variants to tell healthy people that they might drop dead. I so worry about this issue. I don't want anybody to die suddenly. I want to prevent sudden death, yes. But the idea of assigning a phenotypically normal person as having a deadly disease that could cause them to drop dead, that notion scares me a lot. I still have written in my notebook some notes from Dr. Michael Ackerman, one of his lectures. He's from Mayo Clinic. He was an author on the study, and he talks frequently about the limits of gene testing. And he told the audience that phenotype is king. The problem with these unknown variants is the noise. We don't know the significance. And this study corroborates that. Now, I don't do many gene tests, and I surely don't do them unless I have a very high pretest suspicion or the confidence that it might change what I do with that patient. Next up, coronary calcium and AF. The presence of coronary calcium and the rate of progression of coronary artery calcium associates with the risk of atrial fibrillation. These were the findings of a MESA cohort study published in the journal Circulation Cardiovascular Imaging. MESA is a longitudinal cohort study of more than 5,000 adult-age subjects. The risk of AFib was about threefold higher in subjects who had increase of their coronary calcium or coronary calcium progression. I mentioned this study not because I think we should start doing CT scans to predict atrial fibrillation, but because this is consistent with the notion that the same things that lead to blood vessel disease lead to atrial fibrillation. So, coronary calcium is a manifestation of accumulating cardiometabolic risk factors. Likewise, AFib is a manifestation of accumulating cardiometabolic risk factors. The authors concluded that preventive programs that reduce atherosclerotic burden will possibly reduce AF burden. I'd nix the adverb possibly. Of course, preventive programs like that will reduce atrial fibrillation. Next, heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. I'm going to lead with a really interesting quote from a PI of a major randomized clinical trial that was published in JAMA. Quote, "We should probably not ignore obesity in older heart failure with preserved ejection fraction patients. It may not be benign, and addressing it may lead to clinically meaningful improvements." I'm going to give that quote the lead for the 2016 Obvious Awards. The study enrolled 100 subjects with heart failure preserved ejection fraction to a 20-week investigation of either diet, calorie restriction, or exercise, or both versus a placebo. All three groups, active treatment groups, improved their VO2 max. Now, it was a little bit of a surprise that quality of life by questionnaireing didn't improve, but VO2 max definitely improved. I'm consistently stunned by mainstream medicine's lack of enthusiasm for the basics. The thing about heart failure with preserved ejection fraction is that drugs don't work. I doubt they ever will. Look, as in atrial fibrillation therapy, our heart failure patients are looked to us, their doctors, for advice. We should tell them that they want to improve their exercise capacity, their exercise tolerance, which is really just a euphemism for vitality. They should eat less and move more. These are therapies. They're like drugs. It's not mean, it's not easy to do these things, but it is the best treatment for obese patients with heart failure who want to feel better. I'm convinced of it. And these new revelations lead to my next topic, which is that heart failure deaths are on the rise. A new report from the CDC revealed a steady increase in heart failure-related deaths since 2012. The rates of death from heart failure had been steadily declining over the decade from 2002 to 2012. But in 2012, it flipped, and there's been a steady increase in heart failure-related deaths. Women, specifically, were one of the groups most affected by higher death rates. Now, I can't help but wonder whether we've hit a little bit of a plateau here where medical therapy for heart failure is not going to be able to negate or neutralize the detrimental effects of obesity and sedentarism. Finally, last thing. In closing, I wanted to mention a terrific feature piece from Dr. Michelle O'Donohue, who's a new contributor to the heart.org on Medscape. She's talking about what influences a doctor's decision-making. I love the piece because I think it's important to reflect on our own processes of how we think. Yes, thinking about how we think is valuable because it influences how we frame our discussions. Dr. O'Donohue is awfully young to be this reflective. Now, the good news about that is it's a sign of wisdom. But the bad news is I'm absolutely convinced of this after 20 years. The more you see, the harder the practice of medicine gets. So that's it for this week in cardiology. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.